Accession number 27497, Mr. Dieter Hahn, Reel 2. Now, we're talking about this period after the war started, and we've had a little look at your photograph album, and you've thought of a couple of things that you did. I mean, one of the things that you want to make clear to me and to the people listening is that life did continue as normal.
More or less as normal, yes.
And therefore, there aren't as outstanding events to remember. But let's talk a bit about what you did do. I mean, one thing you used to do was a cinema. Were you very, very keen on the cinema?
Oh, yes.
Talk to me a bit about the cinema.
Well, in those days, the cinema was the thing because there was no television. We had the radio, of course, and they had our favourite programmes. Films, there were a lot. Some war films, which I thoroughly enjoyed. I remember one was called the Pulmerit, you know, the decoration. Was it the First World War?
It was the VC for the British Pulmerit.
Yeah. And I think I saw that film no less than 7 times.
What did you like? Tell me what the film was about. I don't know that one. What was it about? What do you remember of it?
Very little, except that it was about the German Imperial Air Corps.
Did about the aces?
No, not really. About the Imperial Air Corps, you call it, in the First World War, was it?
German Air Force, yeah.
The German Air Force, yeah.
And what did you like? I mean, your father had been in that. Was that what attracted your particular interest to him? Or was it just a good film?
It was just a film I liked.
Any other films you remember?
I think there was one about U-boats, but that's all I know. That there were a lot of war films.
And the other thing is holidays. You went. We just looked at the album, and you went on regular holidays, and they do look pretty idyllic. They just look like normal holidays, and that's very much what you're saying. Tell me a bit about the holidays you went on.
We enjoyed it. We did. Usually, we took. We all had a bicycle, and they were taken on holidays as well. They were taken by train to the destination. So, as you can see, there are some photographs from our holiday where we were all on bikes. We did a lot of cycling there. Went to. Places.
It certainly doesn't look like in the photographs that there's a war on at all.
No. I can vaguely remember my mother had food ration coupons or whatever you call them. Yeah, and she had to hand them over to the owners of the hotel. She sorted. She had all this in hand, so I can remember very little about it.
Now, one thing you mentioned off tape was that the refugees were coming through. Tell me about them.
Well, I can remember that these refugees were coming on the train. We had to go, for some reason or other, we had to help them with their luggage and so on and so forth.
The Hitler Youth or everybody?
No, the Hitler Youth, I think it was. And we got a free train ride to wherever we were going and back again.
And what state were the refugees in?
Difficult to say. Can't remember.
Now, did you follow the progress of the war during these years? I mean, you'd be 12, you know, 13, 14.
Yes, I think I did. Especially in France. Then we jump a little bit to the Russian campaign. Of course, I followed that, if I can remember rightly.
Now, how did you? What was the main media? Was it radio, or was it newspapers, or both?
Both. Radio and newspapers. Yeah.
What was the wireless like? Because the Germans were one of the first to really use it as a propaganda tool, and they used it very well. Were you aware of the power of the radio to influence people?
No, I was too young then. I was too young.
Now, did it affect school life at all?
School life? I vaguely remember that if we had an air raid warning during the night, we were allowed half an hour on our school start later the next morning. I can remember that.
But that's about all, isn't it? The school just carried on.
School just carried on.
And no air raids on Heidelberg at all?
No.
So the next, how did you come to the end of your school years?
When you said there was no air raids on Heidelberg at all, there were some bombs dropped onto the outskirts, but it wasn't an air raid on a town as such, if you know what I mean.
Did you visit the sites?
Yes.
What was it like?
Well, there was just a few houses which were destroyed. That's all. They were on the outskirts of the air.
You find it very exciting, I mean, that sort of thing, or as a young boy, it's bombing and...
Well, I suppose I did find it exciting, because it didn't affect me really, if you know what I mean.
Now, how old were you when you left school?
Ah, we come now to the anti-aircraft.
This is in 1943?
43, yes.
And what month, roughly?
No. I think I've still got some papers there when I was called up. It gives you the month.
So you left school when you were called up, or did you leave school and then? How did it happen?
How did it happen? The whole class, or a whole class, were put to one anti-aircraft battery. The idea was that the teacher came out. It wasn't very far away from Heidelberg. There was a place called Mannheim. The idea was the teacher would come out to the battery, and we had lessons in the morning, and then drilling and so on and so forth, and training in the afternoon. Well, I can't remember how long it lasted, but I don't think it lasted very long, for the simple reason that the air raid sort of went round the clock, with the Americans doing the night, doing the day, and the British doing the night.
And this was at Mannheim?
Mannheim.
Now, what do you know the name of the anti-aircraft battery, or did it have a name or number?
They had a number, yes. I can't remember that, no.
And it was at Mannheim?
Mannheim.
Mannheim, so no... Just Mannheim. And what was the setup at Mannheim, as far as you remember?
Well, first of all, we were on the light 2-centimeter anti-aircraft guns. And then we were put onto the bigger guns, 8.8 centimeters.
Well, tell me about the small one, the 2-centimeter ones first. What were they like?
Well, it was a single barrel one. They were put on top of some wooden towers, if you will, because you had a better field of fire then.
Hmm? And what was the gun drill? What was your role on the guns?
Oh, well, we were trained of any position on the gun, really. Whether it was holding the magazine to the barrel, or sitting in the seat and take aim and put your foot on the firing thing, or changing the gun barrel and all that.
You learned it all.
Yeah, we had to. We learned it all.
And how many? So were there four on the crew?
Yeah, four on the light. Yet four.
And what was the other one? Was it eight centimetres?
8.8.
Oh, the 88, yes.
Yeah, 88, yeah.
Now, tell me about them. What were they like to work on?
Well, they were Russian. They were captured Russian anti-aircraft guns. And to the best of my knowledge, they were of a smaller calibre. So therefore, to take our 88 centimetre ammunition. They had to be drilled out and realigned. And it didn't make them very efficient. You know, when you drill a barrel out, it made the wall of the barrel thinner. And there were a lot of didn't fire at all, or misfired, or pre-fired, or stuck in the barrel, and things like that. We had quite a bit of trouble. Again, we were trained on any position. On any position on that gun. How many men were there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I think there was.
Which did you prefer as a gun, the 2 centimetre ones or the 88?
Difficult to answer which I would prefer. I can remember, I don't think we ever actually shot or fired with the 2 centimetres. Well, quite clearly remember the first time we shot with the 88.
Now tell us about that.
I had to lift or lower the barrel.
You were doing the traverse up and down.
Yeah, up and down. Yeah, because I had a steel helmet on, and I heard the order given fire, and then the thing went off. And I think, if I remember rightly, I lost my steel helmet. Because, again, memories fade, but I don't think we were allowed to have the strap under your chin.
Now, were you actually firing these guns much? I mean, you mentioned you didn't fire the 2 centimetre, but what about the 8.88 or 8.8, the Russian ones?
Oh, yeah, we fired those regularly. Whether we were hitting anything or not, I wouldn't like to say.
Were there older people there? Because you're 16, aren't you, here now? I mean,
The only regular soldier on the gun was the gun loader. Because, as you can imagine, the ammunition was rather heavy. And when the gun was at a steep angle, for us lads, to shove it up the into the breech was too heavy. We were not allowed to do that.
But who did all the technical gunnery? You know, the working out what height to fire, giving you the orders.
Oh, that was done in a central station. That came through via the figures. We had earphones on, and they came through via earphones. And then we had to turn the gun according to the figures, and also up and down.
Now, what do you remember of the raids? Anything that, you know, that you, where you were firing? What could you see? What did it look like? The night raids or the day raids, whichever you remember best.
The day raids, I can remember, because it's only by a chance in a million that I'm here today to tell you the story. We were on the 2 centimetre guns, and as I said, they were on wooden towers. And it was a filthy day, low cloud, drizzle, rain. We couldn't see a thing, we couldn't shoot. And the Americans were over, bombing. And of course, then we were ordered, because we were only young, we were down from the wooden towers.
So this was the 2 centimetre?
Yeah. And next to the towers, there was a little, trench dug. When trench is an overstatement, you couldn't kneel in it, let alone stand up in it. All we could do was crawl in. And we crawled in to this little trench. It was covered over by railway sleepers and grass sods and that sort of thing. I mean, all you did was you were protected against bomb splinters or what have you coming down. And as usual, I was last in. And I happened to look up, and I could see two black eyes coming out of the murk, out of the cloud. And I shouted, "Bombs!" Well, there was a big crash. And I said to our sergeant, I says, "I saw two of them. Where's the other one?" And then we twigged it. About 3 or 4 yards from where we were, they'd started to dig or build an underground telephone exchange, not a public one, it was one for the anti-aircraft. They started to dig a big hole. They started to build the wall out of breeze blocks. It was about, 3-4 foot high. And this bomb had come down, and it jammed right in the corner where the wall was strongest. It jumped between the wall and the oil and the earth. Now, if that aeroplane had flown 6 inches either way, or the bombs had been released a fraction of 1 second earlier or later, it would have been a nearly bullseye on our little trench. I can remember that quite clearly.
Any other incidents from either the daytime or the nighttime raids? Oh, it's difficult to get.
Well, the nighttime raids, they were quite spectacular.
Tell me about that.
You could see the searchlights. You could see the Christmas tree from the bombers. You could see the flashes of the exploding bombs or the flashes from the guns going off. You could see bombers flying on fire or caught in searchlights. It was quite spectacular. It wasn't so long ago after the war when I talked to a gentleman at the Galitz here. And he says, "Oh," he says, "you're German." I says, "Yes." I says, "What were you in?" I says, "I was in the anti-aircraft." I says, "What were you in?" He says, "I was in bomber command." "Where were you stationed?" I says, "I was stationed at Mannheim at one time." "Oh," he says, "I was over Mannheim on several occasions." Well, he said, "What was it like down there?" I says, "Be awful." I says, "What was it like up there?" He says, "Be awful." So, Perp, that has answered your question.
Were you operating in conjunction with the searchlights, or were you just doing what the fire orders that came down the phone said? You wouldn't know what you were firing at or why, or
we were just firing what came through over our earphones. You know, we had to adjust the gun in the direction of the barrel up or down or whatever.
Now, what was your uniform like? Because you were only 16, weren't you? What uniform would you have been issued for this job?
Well, we had two uniforms. One was a dress uniform, and one was a drill uniform, which was terrible. It was just sort of trousers and a jacket on. I mean, I've got a picture there, everyone.
What type of cloth was it? I mean,
linen I think, but as far as I was concerned, it wasn't very smart.
And what about your dress uniform, was that better?
Yes.
What was that like, can you describe it?
It was the colour of the, because the anti-aircraft was part of the Luftwaffe, so the uniform, the dress uniform, was the colour of the Luftwaffe, sort of this bluish colour. And the only difference was we had an armband with a swastika on the ear. And there again, I can tell you a funny little bit. Okay. When we were fitted out, as I said, because it was part of the Luftwaffe, there was a little strip with the eagle, the Luftwaffe eagle. And that was stitched through, right through, so therefore you had a mirror image on the other side. Yeah. And it came separate to the uniform you had to stitch it on ourselves. In a typical German fashion, you quit it out at 2 o'clock, not 5 to 2, you're supposed to be on parade, if you know what I mean. And one morning, the sergeant major, he said, oh, he was going on about shooting aeroplanes down and so on and so forth. And I thought, well, we've heard all this rubbish before. And he made his way over to me. I was first in the front row until his ugly face was, we were nearly touching noses. And he says, Han, in German that was, of course, Han, you're an idiot. He says, repeat that. I jumped to attention, looked him straight in the eyes and says, sir, you're an idiot. And why was I an idiot? Because I stitched this confounded little strip on the wrong way around. Everybody was there with the eagle facing to the left, except Titus, who was facing to the right, or vice versa. Nobody else had noticed it except him.
Good story. Where were you living when, I mean, you know, you're on this anti-aircraft battery.
Yeah.
Where were you actually living?
Well, there were huts next to it.
What were the huts like?
Cheap and nasty. There were only, well, I say huts, they were more like little sheds, if you will. And there were, if I remember right, there was only one room with about six bunk beds or four bunk beds or something like that, wooden bunk beds. Apart from that, we were sleeping on straw sacks. What do you call them?
Palliasses.
Palliasses, that's it, yeah. What else was in these huts or sheds or whatever you call them? I can't remember very much. And then there was a big bar, it was a mess hall.
Now, what was the food like, the army?
Not very good, because it was, things were beginning to get tight in 43, 44. So it was a little bit, what's a typical German food? Bacon and peas or something, wasn't it? Speck and Erbsensuppe, something like that.
Did you get enough of it? I mean, you're a growing lad.
I suppose up to a point, yes.
Now, what was a typical day like? I'm interested in these morning lessons. You were still getting lessons in the morning. Can you tell me about that? Where were they taking? What was happening?
Well, the teacher came out, and as I say, this thing didn't last very long. The teachers came out and gave us lesson in the in the mess hall or the mess barrack or whatever. Yeah, I can't remember a great deal of that.
But it was just normal lessons, normal school lessons.
Yes.
Not military lessons.
No, just normal school lessons. But as I said, they didn't last long, because then the Americans started with their daylight raid, so it all fell flat.
But the intention had been that you would
The intention was for us to have the lessons in the morning and then training in the afternoon.
Now, what was a typical day like then, after, you know, when things got going for you? You know, just give us impressions of what a typical day would be like.
Typical day, including the lessons or
whichever you're, you know, what time would you get up there? Yeah, including the lessons then, if you.
What time did we get up? I guess about 7. Got washed, had our breakfast. Don't ask me where, because I can't remember. I can't remember what it consisted of. And then we had our school lessons, starting again at, I guess, about 8 o'clock, which lasted till maybe 12 or 12:30. Then we had our dinner. And then in the afternoon it was drill.
And what was the drill like?
Mostly on the gun. Cleaning the gun, what it involved, taking the breech block out, and so on and so forth.
And that would go on till when?
I should imagine about 5, something like that. There was also, of course, aircraft recognition. We had models of different aircrafts hanging all over the place, and we had to recognize them, and also, how can you put it, shadows of the thing on a wall. You know, there was a lamp behind, threw a shadow onto the wall, and we had to recognize the aircraft by that.
And anything, so then what would happen after 5 o'clock?
We had our tea. After that, I suppose it was our free time.
Now, all of this would be interrupted by raids, though.
Yeah.
And yeah, that would just stop for a raid.
Yeah.
Now, so
you see, very often, sorry to interrupt, very often, or mostly, the aircraft battery got the alert long before the civilian population got the air raid warning.
Now, what form did the warning take? I mean, how would you know?
Well, I suppose we were told to man the gun. There was whether there was an alarm going off in the camp or not, I can't remember. But we had to man the guns then, you know, power on, ammunition dumps open, barrel at 45 degrees in the general direction of the aircraft and so on and so forth. That was long before the civilian got their air raid warning. So that took up quite a lot of time.